Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 55. Nothing much on new on the front this week, so let's just get right down to it. Damn it. Joining me as always is Gunsage.
Hello.
And also joining me is Patrick.
What is going on, people? Episode 55. It's the same forwards and backwards. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Gunsage, what have you been playing this week?
Well, since my 360 went down again, I've been playing Final Fantasy XII a little bit more, hopping into Metal Saga a couple of times, and a few other things like that. For the most part, I've just been doing PS2 stuff and watching Netflix and such.
Patrick, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I've been playing some older stuff again and some new stuff. Our usual Halo Reach multiplayer that apparently we have to mention. I think Bungie gives us a few dollars every time we say it, or they must, because we always talk about it. It was fun. Aside from that, I played the demo for, what is it, Lego Star Wars 3 or Star Wars Lego 3 or whatever. You get the point. For the 360, pretty fun little adventure action building game, so to speak, with some puzzle elements. You know, it's fun, it's cute, funny little Star Wars-esque characters. Visuals are nice, you know, takes place actually in the Clone Wars, not Episode 3, as the title might suggest, being Lego Star Wars 3. But, I mean, I really like Star Wars, but I was never obsessed with Lego as a little kid back, you know, way back as a child. So I still like it, but, you know, if you really liked Lego and you really like Star Wars, I could see the appeal of this game very, very much. If you got kids and they love Lego, you're going to love this game. It's fun. It's family. It's good. You know, check it out. The demo's there. And, of course, it's always free. If it's free, it's for me. Also, just recently on Xbox Live Arcade, also on the 360, the demo for Torchlight has come out. It's pretty good. I've played it before on Steam on my PC, so it wasn't amazing because, hey, I've been there, done that. But it's a cool, fun dungeon crawler, beat-em-up, loot-gathering, button-smashing, I don't know, kind of Diablo-esque type game. It's good that console gamers get to play it now. People on Steam have been playing it. I know, Bruce McGee, you like the game quite a lot. Check it out. I don't know. I thought I would like it a lot more with a controller than the mouse, but it turns out really it didn't make that much of a difference. Maybe it's because it's the second time I played the demo. But looks like it's pretty much a port. I could be wrong, but from what I played of the demo, it doesn't seem much different than the, version I played on PC. Still, it's definitely worth a shot. I think it's 1200 points, a little pricey in my opinion, but it is a really good game, so check that out. Those are my, I don't know, current games that I've been playing. Last week, I talked about going in my WonderPod time machine, and as I found my Game Boy player once again, and I talked a little bit about Metroid Fusion this time around. I played a little bit more Metroid Fusion on the quote-unquote big screen. You know, it's Metroid. It's classic 2D Metroid. What does that mean? It means it's challenging. It means there's backtracking. It's platforming, adventure, action game. Lots of backtracking, as usual. I'm still early in. I just didn't get enough time to play it, really, to get your teeth into the game. It's the kind of game you need time to play. I'm enjoying it. I'm also playing some other Game Boy Advance games on my Game Boy Player via the GameCube. But I'll get into those in other episodes. So that's pretty much all that I've been playing this week.
Let's see. We did our Halo ad. So we're good on that. So I don't have to mention Halo. Patrick needs to learn that you can map buttons to a keyboard. So it's like his console controller. Maybe we just need to tape the Xbox 360 controller over his keyboard. kidding. I only played three things this week besides the obligatory Halo reference. Played some more Beyond Good and Evil. Still loving it. Played a lot of Minecraft because I'm doing the Minecraft road trip. I think I'm going to do that little series quite a bit different this week, so it's taking a little more time and thought. And then I also played the demo for Dragon Age 2. Now, as a little bit of backstory, I thought the original Dragon Age was a dog turd. I believe in my written post, I called it Baldur's Gate 3, the shit we had left over. And that's really what it felt like. It just, it's the first Bioware RPG I just really did not care for. And so when I played the second, and it felt like a cross between the first and Devil May Cry, I went, yeah, I don't think so. Although I'd pretty much already made up my mind on that. But I do have to point out that John Kind, 77, who was on here a few weeks back, said that you really can't get the feel for a 60 or 80 hour RPG with a demo. That is true. It's very, very true. But when you did not like the first one at all, and they've changed the second one to, as was reported to be on Twitter, draw in shooter players a little more. It's not going to do it for me. I may pick up Dragon Age in the bargain bin. I'm noticing that there's quite a delineation right down the line of RPG players. Some people really, really like it. Some people don't. Personally, for my money, I'd rather save that $60 that could have went to Dragon Age and put it on Elder Scrolls Skyrim. So, you know, that's kind of where it comes down to. For you Dragon Age fans that are shitting yourselves because I've just crapped all over, don't worry about it. It's getting a good Metacritic score. I don't know how, but let's see. Oh, and I also played some more Resident Evil 4 on my iPhone. I'm finally now to the point where me and the touchscreen controls get along pretty well, and I'm working through it. It's funny with iPhone games, and that's just the reason I probably don't own any other handhelds. I forget I have them. Oh, shit. And last but not least, completely forgot about this. My sister and I went in half on a Wii this weekend, so played a lot of Wii Resort and Wii Sports. And you know, the thing about it is, I'm not going to go into big detail, but after having played with the little thing for about 4 days now, what I wrote way back in 2007 for a Destructoid community blog to everything I've ever said about the Wii today, all buying one did was tell me that I was right. And that as long as you have the correct mindset for using the console and don't expect it to be a 360 or PS3, it's perfectly fine. I like the mindless fun. I don't like days when I don't feel like dealing with RPGs or with the latest shooter or with idiots screaming at me. Then there's the Wii. It's simple. It's perfect. After the newness dies down of our family and close friends using it, I'll probably pick up Kirby or Mario, definitely Skyward Sword when it comes out. Considering I only had to have half the cost for it, it was a worthwhile purchase and what I'll be looking forward to playing a few more on. One thing though, people, if you've ever doubted what Patrick and I believe Gunsage as well has said about the virtual console being crap, they're absolutely correct. I went through the whole thing in about 10 minutes and only found one game that I may want to play. And that's all that I've been playing. So let's move on to our debate topic. I saw a news story about Battlefield 3 and how the guys at DICE said, well, we could do 256 players, you know, like the Sony PS3 game Mag can. And it got me to thinking, I'm like, wow, 256 players. I always thought that was kind of hinky when Mag came out, and then to hear the Battlefield 3 guys say it, even as big as Battlefield 3's maps are. Because if you think about it, big team battle in Halo is always a clusterfuck. Whichever one we played in COD Modern Warfare 2 was pretty hit or miss, and that was a lot of people, I think 16 or 20 or something like that. So I thought, well, heck, let's discuss that. Let's just take that and discuss it. Patrick, what amount of people in an FPS match are you the most comfortable with? Or is there a correct number?
Well, it's an interesting topic. It seems a lot of people want more and more and more. And I don't think they've played with more and more and more. They just think they want more and more. It's the society we're in. I think it's, you know, for me personal, this is totally personally opinion here. I think it depends somewhat on the game type, and you hit on it a bit, the size of the maps. I don't like a lot of players. I don't like really overcrowded maps with a lot of people playing. Heck, even in our Halo Reach the other night, when we had four teams of three in some of the smaller maps, I was getting killed from behind and double teamed and shot in the back a lot. So I think the size of the map really depends. So if it's a, say, a deathmatch type game, I'm almost fine with the way it is now. I think maybe around 10 players is perfect for me personally. See, a 5-on-5, which is close. Most of the team deathmatches are like, what, 4-on-4? I just can't see 200 people being fun, you know? Then again, for another, say the games like Rush or even Invasion, stuff like that, okay, we can have a larger group of people. I could say 20 people, 20 to 24 people, 12, maybe 12 people per team, but I really have no interest in playing with 200 people. Maybe I'm in the minority here, you know. I just like the numbers we have now in games like COD and Halo, but wouldn't mind a little bit more, just not a lot more. I don't think that, to be honest, just because a game can have a lot of players on one map doesn't mean it's going to be a better game because of it.
Gunsage, what's the amount of people in an FPS game that you're most comfortable with, or what's your take on the situation?
Well, to be completely honest, 256 sounds goddamned excessive. I mean, to be completely honest, I've never played the game Mag. I did hear the numbers, and I thought, that can't be right. That's too fucking much. That's overcrowded. On the same token, I look at it and I go, okay, yeah, but especially when we're playing Battlefield, there are times where I feel like I have to walk and walk and fucking walk before I go ahead and find someone. So I do understand that, yeah, it would be totally fucking overcrowded with, you know, 256 people. I would say 100 max, if that. Really, I'd say 50 would be a good number, depending on how large the map is. As it stands, I'm perfectly satisfied with 32 person multiplayer, and that's only on the super large maps. To be honest, it doesn't really need to change. Even if you're doing some kind of war, unless it's going to be an MMO, there's really no reason for it to be any larger than that.
Here's the thing. Game developers need to stop following trends. Mag was cool, but to my mind, if it's a Battlefield series, 64 players. It's what we had in the old days on the original 1942 with PC, 32 aside, worked out perfect. Now, I'm talking the old Battlefield series. See, I'm a little concerned DICE is seeing what COD and Halo and COD Crisis, the Halo years, is doing, and they're starting to shrink their maps a little too much. I totally never had a night that Gunsage is talking about in Battlefield, and granted, I do play a lot of Battlefield, that felt like, oh, I'm walking for days. You know, it felt like to me that in Bad Company 2 that they had started to shrink the maps a little more. Medal of Honor, it felt sort of like that, but I think they were going for a little more COD flavor. So if it's big, huge, proper Battlefield maps and 64 players, 32 aside, you got plenty of targets. If it's COD, really more than 20 is stupid. You know, you little idiots can sit there and go, well, you need to learn how to play the game right, and you need to learn how to escape when we're near your spawn. No, there is a number where it becomes too much, and 9 for 10, you're going to get screwed. So I think really, as Patrick was kind of, you know, indicating, it comes down to if it's the Twitch, Halo, COD, Crisis Shooters, yeah, 20, 24. With Battlefield, I'm most comfortable with 64. I could see maybe something a little larger than that, but it depends on how the map is set up, you know. So, I just thought it was interesting because, you know, the DICE guys, I think more than anything, they weren't saying they were going to include it in Battlefield 3. I think more than anything, they were trying to show or trying to at least hint what this new Frostbite 2 engine can do. And that's great, but the problem is PC gamers have the mentality to play games that have like 64 and 70 players. Console gamers don't. Console gamers want their short little maps that they can memorize and you know, lols, I killed you in the same corner 67 times. So they're probably not going to put up with more of a PC style map. Whereas even though I do both these days, I still prefer a PC style Battlefield map. So there you have it, folks. If you want to chime in, you can, you know, do so at our website, WonderPod Online. Okay, Survivor Man G is back again, as he always is. We have another retro segment from him this week. It's an interesting one. It's an early one and a good one. Take it away, Survivor Man G.
What's up, WonderPod crew? Survivor Man G here. And be damned if I didn't have a eureka moment the last time I recorded a message for y'all when I stuck my foot on a thin fishbone. Just thin enough to slip through the hairline crack between the panels housing the computer and the escape wonder pod. After a couple of days of slipping bone after bone into the crack, I was able to gain enough leverage to pry the panel off. Hurrah! Once inside, it only took a day or so to dislodge the communicator and power source to create a portable standalone way of keeping in touch in case I need to leave the crash site. I think I broke the robot though. Oh well. Remember how I found some old hockey gear in the pod? The hockey bag provides an easy way of toting the stuff around easily. I've also taken to wearing the helmet to prevent all the gulls from shitting on my head. This place is still a mess. Those monkeys found a way to take their fishing skills up a level, forcing me to continue to hop around camp even more so, with even more obstacles in my way. And considering last week I proposed Q-Bert for the topic of Wondrostalgia, and speaking of hopping, I figured a natural transition would be to discuss Frogger. Frogger was developed by Konami in 1981, but licensed for distribution by Sega and Gremlin. The basic idea of the game was to get a bunch of frogs from the bottom of the screen to the home at the top. But the catch was that you first had to cross a busy highway to the first safe point, and then cross a river full of floating logs, crocodiles, and turtles to the frog's home. If the vans, trucks, and cars didn't squish you, you still had to deal with turtles diving underwater, snakes, otters, and the crocs themselves. Oh, and there was a running clock ticking down to boot. So tell us all about Frogger, whether you enjoyed it or not, and why this very early game is important to discuss. That's all for me this week. I plan on trying to get the GPS transmitter working now that I can get at it, but it looks to be permanently attached to the Escape Wonder Pod. Well, see what I can do, but until then, Survivor Man G, signing off.
Hey, hey, Survivor Man G, it's nice to hear another transmission from you, and that you seem to be reasonably safe and sound. For another week, at least, maybe we should start calling you MacGyver Man G, with all the innovation and inventions that you seem to have done this week. It's your own version of hacking, I guess, using fish bones. A bit strange. Anyways, on to your next retro question. So, you want us to all talk a little bit about Frogger. A good choice, a very retro, very old school game. You know, it's one of the few classic arcade games that for some reason I didn't have a home version of, or I didn't even have a friend who had a home version of it. So, I never played it outside of the arcades, but that's okay because I'm pretty sure the arcade version, the coin-op version, was probably the best anyways. But it was all right. I was okay at it. My brother was much better than I ever was at this game. Don't know why. I could get a few levels into the game and the fast-moving and, you know, the unpredictable cars along with those logs that would suddenly sink. Pretty much did me in, or I'd jump on the damn alligator instead of the log. So I was never great at it, but I was okay. I could get far enough, I guess. My brother, on the other hand, he could go really far on a quarter, a lot longer than I could, that's for sure. You know, other than that, I haven't really, as I said, played any of the newer games. I know there's Frogger's games with Frogger's name on them. Apparently some for handheld systems that were actually pretty decent. A lot of the times they do that, they turn out to be crap, but I heard they were good. So, I don't know, all I can really say is, even after all these years when I'm stuck in a traffic light as a pedestrian, waiting to cross the street at some busy intersection here in Calgary, I honestly find myself wondering if I could hop across in time, or would I be squished like poor little old Frogger? That's all I got to say about Frogger this week.
Well, did you know, in fact, that Frogger was based on real-life events? It's called New York City. That's pretty much all I have besides, I was pretty much only able to get to, like, the second stage, unless I was playing the Atari, which seemed to be a little bit easier. Not really much to say about Frogger. It is pretty fun to play. It is a classic game, definitely, but not really a whole lot to say. It's not one that I played a whole lot, especially not in the arcade.
Yeah, Survivor Man G, I played Frogger, but I'm kind of in the same camp as Gunsage. It wasn't one that I spent a ton of time on. It didn't capture my imagination like some of the others did. I didn't play it in the arcade much that I can remember. I had it on the Atari 2600, but it was always the game you played when you were bored with everything else. I mean, it was a good game, and you look at, you know, the kind of vertical move across the board setup and style of the game, it's obvious that it deserves a place, a special place in gaming history, and that it probably influenced a ton of other games. It was always kind of amusing to see the little frog get run over, you know, and much like Patrick, once you got to the logs and Patrick, wasn't there lily pads? Wasn't it like logs and lily pads with gators?
Yeah. And sometimes the logs would look like, or the gator would look like a log. He'd just have his mouth closed and then it'd open it up and you're like, ah, shit, I'm dead.
Right. Right. When it was open, it looked more like the one from Pitfall. Same pixelated gator. Yeah. I can remember as a kid on the Atari 2600 getting to like those section of stages and maybe getting past one of them. And then the, alligator in his cameo role on loan from Pitfall would always eat me. So, I'm not real sure why Frogger never had much of an effect. It's a great little classic game, and there's a thousand different ways, audience, you can go find it if you want, but I'm not real sure, Survivor Man G. It's a good game. Glad you brought it up. Glad you and the monkeys and the bones or boners or whatever are getting along good. And hopefully we'll hear. I got a buddy whose dog is nicknamed Boner. Anyways, not for that reason. Anyway, Survivor Man G, now that we've turned your segment into porn once again, enjoy the monkeys and have a good day. Okay, let's move on to news. Our first story, and a lot of these are really kind of quickish stories, but this one we're kind of revisiting something we have discussed multiple times in the past when we thought the next console was going to come out. And the guys over at Eurogamer.net's Digital Foundry have found some very interesting job postings. Basically, they're looking for a graphics engineer who's got a background with 3D graphics cores, some architecture engineers and performance engineers for Xbox console architecture group. Oh, what was the other one here? Senior hardware design verification engineer responsible for elements of the development of both Xbox 360 and next gen console successor. My thinking is if they're putting these kinds of jobs out right now, that means that they're the very, very embryonic stages of the development of the next console. I don't think we're going to be seeing it next year. Although if they stole enough engineers from Apple, maybe. Patrick, you should probably already know what my question is. Now that we've actually seen job postings found at LinkedIn, how long do you think we're going to have to wait until the Xbox 720?
Interesting, because, like you said, these postings kind of are assuming that no one has really started anything, and there's also a chance that maybe this is not for the next Xbox. Maybe it's for something else. Maybe they're thinking about making a handheld system, or maybe they're thinking about making something like the iPad, but it seems to be more than likely for their next generation Xbox. Now I'm thinking it's going to be about 3 years until we see the next one.
Well, let me ask you that. Do you think there's a strong chance that this could be for something completely non-Xbox console related?
It could be, or, you know, they're making an X-Pad or an X-Boy Advance or something, right? I don't know. But there is a chance that this is not for the Xbox quote unquote 720 or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they're making something else. There have always been rumors of them going into a handheld market and maybe doing so. There's a chance that it's not, but because I'm quite surprised. They think there's no way they should be at the starting stages for a next-gen console. Most of the companies go right in right after they release their console. They at least start experimenting with their next. This seems a little too late, in my opinion. Hopefully,
well,
it's something else.
I'm not talking about when I say embryonic stages. I'm saying of actually getting a prototype built. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's engineers that have been working on, you know, the concept and on paper designs or on screen, if you. You know, tech heads prefer designs have been going on since the 360 kicked out the door. But you would think that Microsoft would be going a little slower because as our next story shows, Kinect's doing really well. And, you know, you kind of want to extend the life of the 360 a little bit. So let's bring Gunsage in on this. Gunsage, first off, when do you, with this bit of news breaking, how many years do you think now until we see the next Xbox?
I still think it's going to be a couple of years, and the only reason why I say that is because unless they intend, well, okay, it's hard for me to gauge again because I wasn't in Xbox Live on the last generation console, you know, the original Xbox. I never got online with it or anything. So I look at this and I go, they're making enough money off of 360. They just went ahead and, you know, brought out a new peripheral, the Kinect, to try to, you know, extend its life and everything like that. So it's entirely possible they still have a couple, maybe three more years on top of it. It's entirely possible they could be going to the portable market, though I don't think that's a good idea. Nintendo pretty much has that market cornered. It would be interesting. It would technically create some competition, but I think, if anything, they might be trying to go ahead and check out and see if there's any, like, 3D technology or anything like that going on.
I found it kind of interesting, and to be honest, I never even thought about what Patrick and Gunsage are talking about with the, you know, handheld or X-Pad. He just had to say X-Pad. That sounds more like a tampon. Sorry. But my pad has red-ringed. Anyways, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Try getting that
digital
mental
period.
Image out of your head. For 5 days, your X-Pad will red-ring, and then it'll go back to normal. Fuck, now I've knocked myself off the rails. Anyways, but I think it's pretty telling. As I said when Patrick was talking there, I have no doubt that they've been kicking around ideas and at least getting things, you know, written up and drawn up and probably plans for things. But these kind of job listings lead me to believe that they're probably getting into the hardcore phase of getting a prototype built, if it is indeed the next Xbox, and trying to figure out exactly where they want to go with it. The 3D thing did catch my eye, much like Gunsage was talking about. It makes me think that maybe they believe Sony's on to something with 3D. I still am very much not sure 3D's going to stick with us as well, especially after some of the listening to some people talk about playing a game in 3D. I think we'll have that question answered a few months after the 3DS is out here in the United States, or I should say worldwide. But it's interesting. It definitely says that there's movement going on. To put a number on it, I think I'm going to go longer than these guys, especially with what's coming in our next story. I think 4 years. 4 years should be about right. So let's see. Our next story, and it comes to us from computerandvideogames.com. Now, I need to preface this. Every site, and I went to a lot of them, including two new ones this week, Game Industry Insiders and Escapist Magazine, has Kinect sales cruising past 10 million and certified by Guinness Book of World Records. Well, excuse me, not certified, but they officially named the Kinect as the fastest selling consumer console with 8 million units sold. Now, the reason I say I need to explain this a little bit is because out of all the gaming sites, IGN has this as shipped. not sold. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's gospel that 10 million of these have sold. Guinness Book is releasing it in their Book of Gamer Records as the fastest selling at 8 million units in its first 60 days. Even if it's just shipped, we're probably looking at 5 million units sold. Gunsage, I'm going to go with you first since you don't own one. Is this more than you expected?
Actually, you know, once I saw the game lineup and once I started hearing Pat talk about it, no, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, at first I thought, you know, that's just not going to work. I mean, I don't think we've got quite to that point in, you know, motion sensor technology. And I mean, it's going to be crappy. I mean, I see how my Wii does different motion stuff and it works sometimes and sometimes not so much. This is just going to be gimmicky. And then as soon as I started actually seeing videos of people playing the product, enjoying the product, having fun with, you know, they're not putting on a show either. They're legitimately enjoying the product. I'm looking at it and I'm going, wow, they could really have been onto something. You know, they have really thought this out, and the lineup is a really good, solid lineup. I mean, you know, especially with the DLC and everything, they've got a good thing going here. I mean, I see Dance Central shit popping up all the time that I'm like, yeah, I'd totally dance to that. That's a great idea. And for me, it really is just the Dance Central. I don't care. That would be the game for me to get. But I look at it and I go, the potential, the marketing potential, the expansive potential, oh yeah, I'm not surprised at all, especially now that I've seen it in action.
All right, Kinect Boy, I'm sure you're probably not surprised either, considering you've had this thing rumored to have had this thing, excuse me, I'm using air quotes, long before it hit the marketplace. Those are rumors, people. Yes, I have no solid evidence to prove that, but I like rumors, especially when they concern Patrick. It could possibly get him in trouble. Anyway, are you surprised, or is this pretty much right on?
Well, it's interesting. I'm surprised at the 10 million, and some sites are saying 10 million sold, some sites are saying 8 million sold and 10 million shipped. It doesn't matter. It's still way more than any of these hater/hardcore gamers will ever be able to digest. I'm surprised at the huge number, but I'm not surprised at its success. I knew it was going to be successful, like you said, and I think it's fine to say that I've had it for a long time before anyone else, well, not anyone, but most people had it. I knew it was going to work. I just didn't think it was going to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. I didn't think it was going to be literally a phenomenon to be exact. So I'm not amazed that it's doing this well, but I didn't think it was going to be quite so, like, I don't know, quite so impressive.
I was not a hater for either of these. I wasn't 100% sure Sony's Move was going to work as well as they claimed and that Kinect was going to work, although I knew the tech was there. I knew we had the capabilities behind the tech. It was just putting it all into one unit and making it work. Frankly, I'm really, really surprised about these numbers. I tend to believe they are true. I think it's 8 million sold, as Patrick pointed out. The only ones that have specifically said shipped, as I said in my opening, are IGN. But still, I expected at this point in its life cycle, it probably would have sold 3 million and then probably would have went through a lull until another game like Dance Central came along or something that might have just captured a little bit of the core market. And I say good on them. You know, and to be honest, I'm pretty sure Sony Move is doing just as well. I know a lot of people were using it in Killzone 3 and having really good success with it, along with some accessories for the Move. So that's good. And the biggest reason for me it's good is because you core gamer babies who are crying and whining that motion control is going to take over and ruin your goddamn consoles and all this other horse crap. No, it's not. As I said, no, it's not. Bulletstorm's done well. It's been out since Kinect. COD Black Ops did well. It's been out since Kinect. You know, Crysis 2 is coming out. It's a damn COD Halo clone. It's going to do well. Homefront's out here next week. It's going to do well. None of it has to do with Kinect. It's completely separate from Kinect. Kinect is still selling well, and it's not affecting your core games. I'm actually looking forward to seeing if Epic or maybe 343 Studios does a tie-in rail shooter of some type for either Gears of War or Halo. Then I might find the room and space to actually own a Kinect. But good on you, Microsoft, and you too, Sony. Sounds like this motion control thing's here to stay. In our next story, and one that's, it's not a surprise, but at the same time, I'm a little disappointed that they did it. It comes to us again from computerandvideogames.com. Gears 3 can lure Call of Duty players, says Microsoft. Gears of War 3 FPS-inspired game modes can lure Halo and Call of Duty players to the third-person shooter series, says Kevin Ungast, senior producer at Microsoft's Interactive Entertainment business. Try saying all that three times fast. Speaking to CVG in a recent interview, Ungast said he thinks Gears 3 is going to be huge in 2011. It's the biggest and best Gears we've done. It's our blockbuster and a huge, huge release for us, he said. The game's new Team Deathmatch mode is one FPS stalwart to make it over to Epic series, having teams share a pool of lives before blah, 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 blah. You know what? I'm not a big fan of the Gears franchise. That has become painfully obvious to anybody that listens to the show on a regular basis. More than likely, unless Horde mode is a-hoppin', I will not be picking up Gears 3. Here's the thing. So it has Deathmatch. I don't care. And I really don't think that the hardcore COD players are going to put down Black Ops long enough to care about Gears of War 3 because it now has Team Deathmatch. Because Black Ops will still be going. Halo will have its map packs. So that's kind of my take on it. Patrick, am I right? Is it not going to draw any more share out of the other Twitch shooter market just because they added Deathmatch?
Probably not. One thing about Gears of War, and I do like the single player. I like Gears of War franchise for some reason. I don't know. Mostly for the single player. And then, yes, Horde mode, as you mentioned, is pretty good. One thing about multiplayer Gears of War, whether it's Gears of War 1 or whether it's Gears of War 2, is this. It sucked. The servers sucked. There was lag, and it sucked. And the gameplay itself was crappy. I mean, here's basically what you did in Gears of War Deathmatch, in Gears of War 1, and in Gears of War 2. You run as fast as you possibly can to find certain weapons, the shotgun and the sticky grenades, and then you run back to find someone and you stick them with the grenade or you shoot them with the shotgun. That was it. There was no strategy. There was no... It's not like a first-person shooter multiplayer game. When I mean multiplayer there, Gunsage was saying we had fun, and we did. That was co-op, and I had a great fun with you, Gunsage. We beat the game. It was cool. So that was good. I agree. Like, that part of multiplayer is good. But the actual deathmatch, I don't like it at all. So, I don't know. I am not a big fan of Gears of War's. As you can tell, online deathmatch games, I play it for Horde mode and I play it for single player mode. Unless they make major, major changes from Gears of War 1 and Gears of War 2, I guess, Bruce, you'll be able to tell us about that in the not too distant future because there's a beta coming up with Bulletstorm.
If you went and pre-ordered Gears of War 3, I wouldn't be forced to suffer through that beta. You do know that, right? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, before he continues, yes, because I have been told it would be good for the show, I will be playing the Gears of War 3 beta.
Mm.
It could be fun. I'm more doing the grumpy old man thing to annoy Patrick, who's trying to get me to play it because for the show, which he's right. But anyway, there you go.
It's just not the same. So like I was saying, unless they've made major changes to it, it's not going to draw over Halo players, Call of Duty players, even Battlefield players. It was just, I wasn't a big fan of the multiplayer, and I don't think I ever will be. That's not why I play Gears of War.
Gunsage, do you, don't think this is going to pull in too many more players just because they added Deathmatch?
Well, here's what I got to say. I tend to like third person a little bit better than first person only because you got more of your peripherals there. That's cool. Beyond that, And I've only played Gears of War 1 online. I played it a couple of times. I was just reminded just now by Pat that, yeah, we played through it on co-op. I also played with Seth and Angie once or twice on the multiplayer. Every fucking time, hard as fuck to find a room, hard to stay connected to the room, and, you know, we might get connected where it was just the three of us, but then it just got old real fast because it's like 2-on-1. So, I don't know. I mean, I looked at it and I started looking at the map designs and stuff, and I was like, well, there's a couple of strategic points here and there, but they need to work on this shit. And I was especially surprised because I'm like, wait, aren't these the same people that did Unreal Tournament? I mean, yeah, because it was Epic, right? So, what the hell is going on here? I almost think they don't know what the fuck they're doing when it comes to multiplayer deathmatch or servers or host migration or anything like that, which is exactly why people play games like Call of Duty or Battlefield or Team Fortress or whatever, because they actually know what the fuck they're doing. With these guys, they develop a solid single player or co-op campaign, then they go into multiplayer and it almost feels like it's tacked on. I never got a chance to try Horde mode. I keep hearing it's good. Shit. I never got a chance to try Horde mode. I keep hearing it's good. But, yeah, I probably won't be picking up Gears 3 either. Honestly, I want to pick up Gears 2 just because of the single-player campaign, but that's about it.
Yeah, apparently I was the only one that, in our little group, or maybe at large, that was not all that impressed with the Gears 2 campaign. I'm pretty easy to please when it comes to shooter single-player campaigns. I play through them multiple times and find enjoyment in it. I couldn't even get halfway through Gears 2 the second time before I went, yeah, I got other things to do. So really, for me, it comes down to Horde mode with Gears. And much like these guys have already illustrated Epic, I would much rather that you focused on making your servers work, at least to the level of Activision and EA's, who are far from perfect as well, then throw in Deathmatch, hoping to pull 5 12-year-olds off of COD Black Ops. Actually, most of us gamers would rather you left them at COD Black Ops. In fact, just to wrap up the story, I would rather you did it like Bulletstorm. I thought Bulletstorm was great. Granted, right now none of my buddies have it, but I thought Bulletstorm was perfect with some kind of little single-player echo mode where you can, you know, challenge yourself with better times, better scores, and then just Horde mode. I thought it was brilliant. Now, I understand the Gears franchise is different. It's always had multiplayer mode, but it's something to think about if there's a Gears 4 or something like that. Okay, and our last story, and I actually just had to look this up because I'm like, now, wait a minute. That can't be right, but it was right. I was just not doing my math correctly and forgot a couple things. The other day, at the NASDAQ Stock Exchange, no less, the founders of Blizzard, Frank Pierce and Mike Morhaime, got two gentlemen who have cost me years and years of my life, basically, celebrated the 20th anniversary of Blizzard. Now, since their takeover by Activision, I understand it's not quite been the Blizzard we all remember, but I do want to wish them a happy anniversary for these reasons. When Warcraft 1 came out, it was the first video game that I can remember, I'm sure there were others, but that really sticks in my memory as an RTS game that just sucked me in, and I played it forever. And then, after a couple Warcrafts, you had Diablo, which introduced me to more the dungeon brawler. Those of you that have played, Torchlight, we'll understand. If it wasn't for Diablo, there'd be no Torchlight. So even if you don't particularly like the fact that Blizzard's still making great quality games, but they're being split up into manageable chunks, manageable only for Activision, you still got to give these guys a lot of credit. They have done a lot for gaming. Blizzard is one of my favorite all-time game developers. Happy 20th anniversary, guys. I hope there's 20 more in you. Patrick, anything you'd like to add to that or say to...
I'm not a heck of a lot. I'm not a big fan, but yes, it's a milestone. That's all I'll put.
let's put it this way, ladies and gentlemen, just so we can include Patrick a little bit and so I can make fun of him. What Nintendo is to Patrick, Blizzard is to me, even after Activision bought them. So that should give you some kind of indication. Yep. So, I mean, I cut my teeth on a lot of Blizzard games. In fact, I'm one of the few people, I need to look online and see if anybody else has got it, that has the Sierra expansion pack for the original Diablo. I should sell that bastard on eBay, see if I can find the box. It's probably worth a lot of money. Gunsage, would you like to wish Blizzard a happy 20th anniversary? Are you much of a Blizzard fan?
Actually, yeah. I did play Diablo. Before that, I had gone ahead and played Warcraft 1 and 2. Never really got into StarCraft for some reason. Another game that a lot of people never really heard of, Blackthorn. I still need to go ahead and get through that. It was kind of like Abe's Odyssey, except you had a fucking gun, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I have that. I still have on disc. I just always forget it's there. When you're trying to compete for spotlight time with series like Warcraft and StarCraft and Diablo, yeah, Blackthorn was a good game. A little underrated, probably.
Yeah, I mostly liked it just because I like those kinds of games, you know, Out of This World, Prince of Persia, different stuff like that. But I don't know, for me, that and Warcraft 2 are probably the highlights. Like I said, I never really got into StarCraft. I know there are people that still today do StarCraft tournaments, and I'm like, okay. I guess I went ahead and missed that train. But yeah, happy 20th, Blizzard, and I hope you get Diablo 3 out real soon.
In three easy episodes, so you can buy it three separate times. If you can't tell, I'm a little bit disgruntled about the way that Activision is handling StarCraft and Diablo 3. That has been news. So now we're going to move on. We tried it last week. We'll try it again this week to a segment called What I Missed. Patrick, you said pre-show you had something. What did I miss?
Well, you didn't necessarily miss it because this is almost breaking news. But today I noticed that there was a little thing. This is going to be highly ironic because of my barfing over hackers and lawsuit questions all the time. I'm going to bring a hacker piece of news for us. Yes, Bruce McGee is reveling in the irony right now. 1.2 million worth of Microsoft points have been taken after hackers figure out the code. Algorithm? I think it was the right word. Basically, some hackers have figured out how to, well, break the code on the promotional codes that were redeemable for small amounts, 160 Microsoft points. For some reason, that's the one they could break, not the bigger ones, not the 2,000, but 160. However, they've got some sort of program that just keeps on doing it over and over again, and apparently they have approximately 1.2 million worth of MS points have been quote-unquote stolen or hacked by these guys. I think Microsoft has now responded by closing it down or doing something. But, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to leave too much of a paper trail and get their little asses caught.
Yeah.
I have nothing else other to say. This segment's more to just bring up stories. I have nothing other to say than, yeah, I spent a whole week avoiding doing lawyer stories and actually writing about them. And good old Patrick, he likes throwing me curveballs. He doesn't like me to ever feel comfortable, and God love him for it. Gunsage, why don't you real quick tell us a little bit about that Persona story I saw you kick up in the Ori's Night. I know this, ladies and gentlemen, as he kicked it up in the text chat.
Well, I only just went ahead and recently found about it on Destructoid. Persona 4 was a pretty decent game, came out a few years ago, and it involved a lot about, you know, just mysterious murders happening and things of that nature and all kinds of dark shit, you know. I'm just going to read this pretty much verbatim. Only those that played Persona 4 will get this, but seeing as how it's one of the highest rated PS2 games available, I'm betting that many of you will get this. Basically, there was a man who only had underwear and a t-shirt on. He was found on top of a 1,000-foot broadcast tower. And in the game, it said this was happening in 2011, and now it's 2011. Cause of death, 100% unclear, just found dangling from the top of broadcast tower. So I'm trying to, they're basically trying to figure out, is it like, you know, someone who's trying to copy the game, or is it just someone who's trying to go ahead and, I don't know, a psychopath in general, or what exactly? I don't know. It's a little strange. I mean, if we start finding people run over, you know, in frog suits or things of that nature, I think we're going to have some things to worry about.
Yeah, it's probably the first news story, and I glanced at that one. The first news story where video games and violence actually have a solid tie-in, or possible. I mean, this could still just be a random event, too, you know. It's not like a t-shirt and underwear and a tall broadcast tower are exactly the most distinct things. It'll be curious. I hope Destructoid keeps up with it, or if Gunsage, you see anything else about it, either on the, do it on the website or here on the show, let us know that if it was actually a copycat killer or was it just random. But it is interesting. You can find that in the Destructoid archives. I thought that was kind of, it's like, whoa, creepy. An actual video game violence story. So that is what I missed this week. Both really, really good. Now it's time to turn it over to everybody's favorite hooker to get us through the promotional items. Think of it as a bad infomercial. Take it away, Patrick.
Very bad infomercial.
Well,
only without my ugly face. So anyways, yes, it is that time where I bore people, but it's important information. Of course, we all know WonderPod Video Game Podcast is available on iTunes. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, subscribe. We enjoy that. We like the comments, and of course, the only way our little itty-bitty podcast is going to make it in the with the big boys and girls is if you give us a rating. Otherwise, no one's going to find us in search engines. That's just how it works. So please give us a rating. We're also, of course, speaking of Apple, we're on Apple TV. Sit back and listen on Apple TV if you have the liking to do that. All of our files are available at archive.org, which is good. Good for those of you that don't want to use an Apple product to get our things. And also, of course, on the main website, WonderPodOnline.com. You can download the latest MP3 files there, as well as a ton, and I do mean a good amount of content is popping up every day on the website. We have new people joining our misfit group of friends and staff members every day. We got a new one yesterday. I know Gunsage has got a bunch of great stuff on there. Bruce, you put a lot of stuff on there, but there's so much other stuff. Audio Master G, and there's lots of wrestling stuff on there, and all sorts of crap. I mean, stuff. Crap might be the stuff I post on there. So check out WonderPodOnline.com. Of course, we're on Facebook. That is the place where you should be probably most comfortable in asking us questions. That's where we find most of them. Maybe we miss them everywhere else. So WonderPodOnline is the name on Facebook. Send us a friend request. We only bite if you ask. And we don't bite that hard. Aside from that, we do have, of course, the old school email address that Bruce McGee is going to tell you about right now.
Yes, that email address is wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Until episode 56, I'll probably be hanging around a 1,000-foot broadcast tower. I'm also out of here. See ya.
Goodbye.
The reverse of Guten Tag. Oh, yes, auf Wiedersehen.
Hello there. As you can tell, the show was a little bit short this week, so I thought I would give you some bonus stuff. I'm saying bonus stuff because first thing I want to do is, if you aren't aware, which you should be, there was a horrible, horrible earthquake in Japan yesterday. As always, there was people injured, and some, unfortunately, were killed. What I'd like you, the listening audience, to do, if you can, is find a relief agency, the Red Cross, or something of that nature, depending on the country you live in, and donate whatever you can. Luckily, the Japanese have very superior infrastructure and engineering in their building, so there wasn't as much damage as there could have been, but still, people's lives have been affected. I also want to send out thoughts and well wishes to all the people in Japan from the crew here at WonderPod. I know of at least three or four people that I follow on Twitter that live in Japan, all of whom are doing fine, which is good, but not everybody is. So if you have a little bit of extra money and some time and would like to donate, please do. Thank you. Okay, now let's move on to the, I guess, bonus rant or whatever. I got my latest issue of Game Informer, and in it, during their mailbag, they had some things about Elder Scrolls Skyrim. And it kind of torqued me off because basically in the previous issue, they asked readers what editions they'd like to see the Elder Scrolls. Co-op and multiplayer, according to the magazine, were the most common request. Now, co-op in a standard RPG, I could kind of see. Makes a little bit of sense. As long as the game isn't co-op centric to the point where you cannot play it single player and enjoy it. But the multiplayer aspect just seems so stupid to me. It's Elder Scrolls. It doesn't need multiplayer, people. It really, really doesn't. It's not an MMO, okay? I don't quite understand why these people want to turn everything into World of Warcraft, but please, Bethesda, and future RPGs, don't listen to these people. I don't care how numerous they are. A lot of us still want a standard single-player RPG. There's plenty of MMOs out there. If we want to partake in them, we can. And I have in the past. Obviously, I've played World of Warcraft. I've played a couple others short-term. And if you don't believe me that a majority of the folks want it to be more like WoW, well, let me read you just a few of the mailbags, or paraphrase them, I suppose would be the best way to put it. Let's see, we got one guy here who wants to be able to custom craft his own armor and weapons and add magical items during the process. Gee, what does that sound like? Let's see here. Somebody wants mounts and mount fighting. I mean, granted, there were mounts in Oblivion, but let's see. Oh, somebody wants a random dungeon generator so that they can enjoy the game long after the single player is over. Yeah, I'm sorry, but a lot of these mailbag things just make it sound like, let's make it more WoW-like. Look, there's a place in the market for standalone RPGs. It doesn't need co-op. It doesn't need multiplayer. I'm so sick and tired of everything needing multiplayer. And the last thing that does are RPGs like Skyrim, like Oblivion, like Baldur's Gate. You know, co-op, I can see if it's done right. But if you want to play WoW, go play WoW. Don't turn other RPGs into WoW. Okay? It's such simple, folks. And that has been your bonus rant. Hope you enjoyed it. And as I said in the opening of this little segment, our thoughts and well wishes go out to the people of Japan. Bye.